All right, let's do this.
Done. Here's to us, November, and the waning sun, and all the proofs I'd like to prove. We go down tonight.
Hello, and welcome to episode 149 of Flags Fly Forever, a baseball prospectus fantasy podcast. I'm your host, George Bissell. I'm a writer at Baseball Prospectus, and I'm joined by my usual Friday co-host, Mark Barry. Mark, how you doing tonight, buddy?
Oh, I'm wonderful. It's Free Agent Friday. Football is about to start. There are a couple games on right now, and I couldn't be any better.
Yes, you're right. It is hashtag Free Agent Friday. We are back. We're going to talk about the column that we co-author at BP. If you're listening to the pod, you can go read it right now and follow along with us. We're going to talk about some current events as well. We are recording this on, it is Thursday, September 7th. It is about an hour before the Patriots-Chiefs kickoff at Gillette Stadium. I'm not a huge sports fan of any particular teams, but I am a Patriots fan, so feel free to direct your hate mail to me. Yes, I know we've had it about as good as you can have it for a franchise for a long time, but I'm very excited for this game coming up. Rex Burkhead, I'm all in. I've pushed all the metaphorical chips to the center of the table. I love me some Rex Burkhead. Just throwing that out.
So you're switching from Mike Gillisley. I know you were a big Gillisley guy like a month ago. You're jumping ship and just putting all your faith in Burkhead now?
Yeah, Gillisley's a weird case because he had a hamstring injury. He missed a ton of practice time. It's one of those things, like follow the drumbeat, like what you're hearing, what you're seeing. He didn't look that great when he did play in the preseason. The usage was very limited. And then Bill Belichick said some things about Gillisley too. Like he needs to catch up on some stuff and he's missed some time, so I kind of, just reading the tea leaves, I don't see Gillisley being like a huge part of the game script. I just don't. I just think like Rex Burkhead is the guy right now. So we'll see how
Gillisley is going to be the guy in week 7 that has 4 touchdowns and everybody is like, okay, Gillisley is the new top 5 back, and then he doesn't play for the next 2 weeks.
Yes, he is new Jonas Gray. He is like a Ferrari version of Jonas Gray. I'll stand by that. Yeah. So, hey, let's dive into this stuff. A little bit of housekeeping first. We'll cover all our bases here. The season's winding down, but there is still time to subscribe to Baseball Prospectus. You can do that with a 1-year premium membership. We're running a couple specials right now on subscriptions, which everyone should check out, get you on board for next year. A lot of cool stuff going on at the site. We just launched Baseball Prospectus in Spanish. We are doing Spanish translations of Baseball Prospectus articles, which is a really cool thing. BP en Español. You should go check that out. So big props to Rob Maines and some of the other authors at BP for getting this thing started. It's very cool. I'm on board with this. So what other housekeeping stuff? If you like the podcast, you can subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher Radio app, wherever you get your podcast. Leave us a rating or review if you like the show. That helps us out tremendously. It lets our many sponsors know that you like the program. So please go do that. You can follow us on Twitter. Mark is at Hoodie and Ty. I am at George Bissell. We're hoping to get Brett Sayre and Mike Gianella back on the show as soon as possible. We've reached this crazy busy point in the year where we're not only writing all of the September call-ups and getting ready for the playoffs, but we have the BP annual coming out in the offseason, so a lot of balls in the air, so to speak. And I don't know about you, but I'm pretty stressed out. This is a crazy time right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of moving pieces, and just when I thought, like, this is kind of my first year with BP, and just when I thought the season was kind of winding down and I could exhale, Nope, it's just ramping back up. And so there won't be any exhales until maybe December.
Yeah, it feels like a crazier year than usual. But hey, we're here to break it all down. So let's start with some of the call-ups. And Mark, you're gonna drive this segment because I've been doing this the last couple of weeks, and I have some piping hot takes that have been they're in the oven, and we're ready to take those out. So take it away.
I'm excited. Yeah. When I originally heard that the oven was prepped and the timer was beeping, I was pumped for tonight's episode because I think we're going to get some good stuff.
Yeah.
But first, I wanted to kind of talk about something that just happened this afternoon. There weren't any super notable things, I guess, at least compared to the last couple weeks that we've done this. But we had a really big prospect call up that you wrote the fantasy implications for BP, and it's up on the site. But of course, I'm talking about Victor Robles. The stud,
the beast.
So what do you think? I don't know if we can expect a ton out of him just on the fantasy landscape for the rest of the season, but what do you think about Robles?
Yeah, so I wrote the fantasy impact of the call-up, which is up at Baseball Prospectus right now. Tip of the cap to my good friend Jarrett Seidler. We've had him on the podcast before. Hashtag friend of the show. He wrote the scouting side of the call-up, and man, we turned this thing around in like 2 hours with no prep. So props to Jarrett. I mean, he really killed this one. And the variable, and this is the thing I talked about in the piece, you know, the sort of unknown variable with it is how much time Dusty Baker is going to entrust Robles over the rest of the regular season here. We don't really know. Obviously, he's 20 years old. He's the youngest player in the major leagues right now. He was born in 1997.
So, oh my God.
Yeah, if you want to feel old, I mean, he and Ozzy Albies are the only guys born after 1996 in the majors right now. So, I mean, he's jumping from Double-A right to the big leagues. So there's going to be a pretty steep adjustment period. But the other thing we know about Robles is that he's an elite fantasy prospect. I mean, just to simplify it, he's got the raw talent where you can envision a scenario in which he evolves into this sort of five-category monster where he's a perennial first-round pick who really impacts the game. And just looking at his numbers, in nearly 500 plate appearances between high A and double A this year, he hit 300 with a 382 on-base percentage, 55 extra base hits, only 10 home runs, but he stole 27 bases in 37 attempts. So this is sort of in the current fantasy landscape where power is up league-wide, but stolen bases are declining. You're looking at a guy with a plus hit tool, good power, and plus speed. I mean, this is sort of the embodiment of what you want a franchise cornerstone to be in a dynasty league. We can talk about what the long-term future looks like for Robles, but my immediate expectations, I mean, I'd temper them a little bit. But this is the type of talent where if you're in a redraft league and you're going into the playoffs or the stretch run, I'd hate to see somebody else beat me because I wasn't willing to sacrifice someone on the back end of my roster for this type of a talent. You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely. I think I took a chance on Cody Bellinger kind of in the same way earlier this year. I wasn't sure how long he would be up. I thought he was kind of just going to be a you know, a couple weeks at most just while Adrian Gonzalez healed up, and that turned out to be pretty good. So with these guys that are so good, you just have to, you know, you just have to take the plunge. And if you drop them 2 weeks later because they're not playing, then you do that. But I think I read something earlier today where Dusty Baker was, you know, being Dusty Baker, and said that he was probably up to learn more than he was to play, which doesn't make total sense to me since they have a pretty huge lead on the Cubs for that that NLDS home field advantage spot, and they're probably not catching the Dodgers. Like, I don't see what the harm is to just get Robles some reps. But you know, it's hard to decipher what Dusty Baker's gonna do with these young players.
Yeah, I think the worst thing you could do is thrust him into a prominent role and have him fail to the point where it's noticeable, and it impacts his sort of long-term standing within the organization and how he's perceived by the fans. Because the last thing you want to do is there's a lot of optimism, but you never want that dread of, this guy came up, we put him in a big spot, and he failed. That's probably the worst thing that could happen. So I understand where they're coming from. But like you said with Cody Bellinger, when you have a prospect that's this caliber of talent, if you put him in a situation to succeed, it sort of behooves them to keep giving him those opportunities. So I could envision a scenario in which he gets hot and it becomes very easy for them to put him in the eighth spot in the lineup every day and say, all right, just go out there and get him. And that could be the difference here down the stretch. I mean, they don't have a ton of options. It doesn't sound like Bryce Harper's on the precipice of coming back. So I'd be bullish on Robles. I think, like, if I'm holding a roster spot for like a bad middle reliever in a deep mixed league, I'm cutting that guy and I'm taking a shot here if he's available. Obviously in a redraft, he's long gone in dynasties. I mean,
oh yeah,
we've been writing about him. I remember writing for him over at the Dynasty Guru in like 2014 because he was tearing up the New York Penn League, and I was like, this guy's insane. And that's where the hashtag the beast comes from, because nobody could get him out. And I really like Victor Robles. I think he's going to be pretty special. And the long-term ceiling is just kind of crazy. Do you want me to talk about the long-term here with him? Because this is where I think it's interesting with Robles. When you talk about him in context to the other elite prospects. I mean, if you look at – I know I'm rambling here.
No, I get it. Yeah.
I've been waiting weeks to just spit these takes. So if you look at the prospect landscape, right, if you look at – Brett Sayer and Ben Carsley's midseason dynasty prospect list, the top 101. I mean, you have Yoan Moncada, who's graduated, Ahmed Rosario, Rafael Devers. Those are three of the top five. So they're all gone. Brendan Rodgers will still be there. And then the other name is Victor Robles. So Ronald Acuna was six, but he was a tier down. He's obviously going to jump up. I think Eloy Jimenez, too, who was seven on that list, I think he's going to jump into that elite first tier just because of how well he's hit since coming over to the White Sox. So I'd be interested in your take almost on this. If you had to pick right now, Victor Robles or Ronald Acuna for the top spot in a dynasty league, because I think this is going to be a really fun debate. It's reminiscent of the old Trout-Harper debates where it's like either way you're fine. But I'm curious who you would go with personally here.
I think I would have to go Acuna, but not by much, just because of the experience and how fast they pushed him. I understand that fast is crazy when we were just talking about a guy that's jumped from Double A to the majors, but the rate at which Acuna just flew through that system and dominated pretty much more at every level has been pretty staggering. And I don't necessarily think that there's a wrong answer, kind of like Trout Harper. Like if you pick Robles, I would be like, yeah, that's cool. I understand that. He's awesome. So I would take both of them without a doubt, but I might give a slight edge to Acuna.
Acuna, 19 years old, just destroying AAA. Like, not just like good for his age, like good for the best hitter in AAA right now. It's really staggering what he's doing. Obviously, the big difference between the two is the power ceiling. When you look at Acuna, similar in terms of size, but man, the power is a couple of grades higher than what you're going to get from Robles. And that's where, and this is what I wrote in the call up for Victor Robles. The difference for me and what sort of separates him from the rest of this elite tier of fantasy prospects is he has that combination of, the superstar caliber five category contributor upside, but you sort of juxtapose that by his floor is sort of a realistic four category contributor, where the only area he's not giving you a plus in is probably power. If he's like a Starling Marte kind of, where he's like 8 to 12 home runs annually, that's still going to be an early round fantasy option if he's hitting for a high average and stealing bases. So
Yeah, yep. Definitely. And he's much more efficient of a base stealer than Acuna, that's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the upside is, like, he's Charlie Blackmon 2.0. Like, that is where it could get to for him, for me anyway. But he's a long way off from that, and I just think the floor is just insanely high with Robles, and that's why he'd probably be the top guy for me, because even if he sort of doesn't evolve and he doesn't become this monster, he's still going to be a guy you can use. Like, it's like a Mookie Betts kind of floor. Like, it's still really good. So I love that kind of profile with him. So I'm all in with Robles. Let's do this.
It would be great. It would be great for that floor, and then to have everyone be disappointed that he's really good instead of really, really good.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing before we go any further, Tyler Glasnow tonight is pitching in the playoffs for AAA Indianapolis. Do you want me to list the fastball velocity for him in the first inning here? Did you?
I noticed the one. I had to tweet something about it just because I saw somebody make a comment. But yeah, let me know what he was getting into.
Okay. So Kyle Glazer, who's a writer for Baseball America, he had the tweet here. Tyler Glasnow threw all fastballs in a 1-2-3 first inning. The velocities, 94, 98, 96, 100. 98, 96, 97, 97, 97, 98, 99. Holy Toledo. With command.
I mean,
with
that's
command.
Okay.
With command.
That's okay if you like throwing really hard and just striking everyone out. I guess that's acceptable.
Yeah, I mean, we touched on it. You've written about it. But the control has improved a lot here with Glasnow. I think he's finally figured something out. And hey, whatever. If it doesn't work out, it's gonna be like 2 to 3 starts maybe at most here in the last month. So, take a shot. The upside is insane. He could do it. So, all right, we're good.
Yeah. Well. Okay. Well, I just wanted to hit a couple more big prospects. We can just kind of blow through these because I don't know how much of an impact they'll really have for the rest of the season.
Let's do it.
But one of the big ones was Francisco Mejia got a somewhat surprising call up to Cleveland, and I think that could be important just because he's a catcher, and the catchers are a barren wasteland. So you wrote the Mejia call up as well, and that was the first piece that was translated to Spanish, incidentally. So what's your take about Mejia? Like, I know he's gonna hit, but is he gonna be able to do anything more than that? Like, does he have any pop, or how are we looking at Mejia?
Yeah, you mentioned it's the first article en español for Baseball Prospectus, so that's a very cool thing. Here's my big point with catcher right now, and I'll pull it up just so I can I can be sure I reference it right, because I want to make sure.
Oh, it's a bloodbath.
Have you gone and checked out the ESPN player rater at all?
Not
a catcher.
Not recent. No, I have not. I have been feeling way too good about things to subject myself to the horror that is the catching position on the player rater.
Well, here's a fun update for you then. I am pulling up the player rater right now. Do you take a gander at who you think the number 9 catcher on that is?
Oh God. The number 9.
Just guess.
Oh my. Well, let's say it's Tyler Flowers.
He's number 11 and he's currently on the disabled list, inactive. Yeah. It's Alex Avila.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
It's not great. Mike Zunino is 10. Christian Vasquez is 13. Manny Pena is 14. I'm telling you, catcher is terrible. And the hang up here is that Mejia is not going to play every day. The Indians do have two other options. They have Yan Gomes and Roberto Perez. So they have a path here to keep Mejia on the bench. But he DH'd in his first start, picked up his first hit in RBI earlier this week. Here's what we know. He has like a 7 hit tool, and that's a 70 hit tool and a 50 power grade. I mean, that's what Jeff Paternostro, who's BP's senior prospect writer, he told us this on the pod here back in July. You know, this might be the number one real life prospect in baseball, just because how often do you get catchers who can hit? You just You just don't. So Mejia hit 297 in double A, 37 extra base hits, 14 homers, 7 steals for double A Akron. He's really good. Catchers are weird. They take time to develop. I think if they want him to stick at catcher as their everyday kind of catcher, that could push back his like realistic arrival in terms of what when he makes a huge fantasy impact. But he's up now. Catcher is awful, and unless you have an elite guy, I really think he can hit, and it matters. So if I'm in like a deep two catcher, this is a guy I want on my roster right now.
Yeah, definitely. The weird thing about the Indians is that they have two decent real life catchers, but not very good fantasy catchers, and I think they're both extended. So that could throw a wrench into things, but I mean, if you have a guy like Mejia that can hit the way he does, to not have a black hole in the lineup is just so valuable. So I would imagine that they'll find a spot for him and he'll push one of those guys aside, whether it's just kind of in a low level trade in the off season or something of the like.
They've started using Mejia at third base a little bit, and he's going to play there in the Arizona Fall League too. So if you add that versatility in, you can rotate him between the hot corner and the dish, and you can put him at DH, and you can move Jose Ramirez all across the field. So I think actually this may be bad news for Jason Kipnis if I'm looking at this roster long term for the Indians. I think he's sort of the guy who maybe goes, and they use Jose Ramirez at second base. That's where I'd look, honestly.
Yeah, I know that they've been talking about moving Kipnis to the outfield for a long time, so I wonder if that gets fast-tracked a little bit.
We'll see.
Yeah.
I don't know yet.
With this winning streak, they've built up such a lead in the division. I would hope that maybe they can work Mejia in there for a little bit more playing time. Francona has been great at just rotating the roster and keeping everyone fresh, which is kind of the most important thing at this point. So it'd be great to see Mejia get a little bit of time before the end of the season. And since there's like maybe 3-4 tops good catchers, it might be worth taking a flyer on him to get a little bit of batting average bump before the end of the year.
Also, Yandy Diaz won't stop hitting. He's a machine right now. His exit velocity is like 94 miles an hour too. I mean, he doesn't always make contact, but when he does, he hits it wicked far. So that's fun.
One of the next guys that we wanted to touch on quickly is JP Crawford. He's taken a little bit of a slide just in prospect lists in the last year or so, but he's had a great second half and finally got called up to the Phillies. Shortstop is not good, but it's not as maybe bad as it has been in previous years. What do you think about JP Crawford? Would you be interested in picking him up for the rest of the year?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of a different situation because of the depth at shortstop. You have Elvis Andrews, who's by far and away the number one shortstop right now, but I mean the position goes like 10
to
15.
Do you mean 20 home run Elvis Andrews?
Yeah, I hate that because he had I looked up the stat in the first so every year of his career combined before this season, he had like 35 total homers and like 5,000 plate appearances. He's got 20 and 500 this year, so draw your own conclusions about what's going on with baseball. Good for Elvis Andrews. He's actually made some real progress at the plate. And he's tapped into power that he apparently had all along.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Crawford, right? He gets like unfairly maligned as this better real life than fantasy prospect, and I don't know if that's too real at this point. Because Ben Carsley wrote the call-up, which is up at Baseball Prospectus right now, and the thing with Crawford is that he's not a great base stealer, which hurts. He's had a nice second half, but 15 homers in AAA this year, that's good. Maybe he can hit for average and power, but it's not like a huge upside toward sort of profile at the position, and that's where I get caught up a little bit. You never know. We said a lot of these things about Francisco Lindor once upon a time, that what does the ceiling look like? It turns out the ceiling's pretty damn high. So this is a dude with a lot of talent, He's going to get every opportunity to cement his status as the shortstop of the future there for Philadelphia. So I'm not interested really in a redraft, but from a dynasty standpoint, I think you sort of missed your window to buy low, speaking, you know, metaphorically, but I think he's interesting long term. He's just getting started, so I'm interested.
Yeah. Well, for the record, I just want to state that I was never one of those guys that was questioning Francisco Lindor's ceiling.
That's
Francisco
good.
Lindor is my everything, and as far as I'm concerned, he has no ceiling.
I was very critical of Lindor right around midseason.
Oh, you don't say.
That hasn't been a great look for me now at this point. I got to own up to that. And he's up to 26 homers, and the average is 270. That'll play.
Yeah, that's not bad.
But if you were 250 with 20 homers, like, that's just not appealing to me. You know what I mean?
I always understood your point.
Yeah.
Well, so with J.P. Crawford, I think he's always struck me as kind of a guy that is fine. You know, yeah. He'll hit a few home runs. He might steal a couple bases, and he'll play, you know, above average to average defense. He's fine, but he's not, and that'll play. He'll be an everyday shortstop for a long time, but it's not necessarily somebody that I'm excited to build a dynasty roster around.
No, that's sort of the point here. I think he was 23rd on the midseason update. He'd been as high as the top five at certain points throughout his career. So, yeah. Interesting player. Definitely someone to keep an eye on. We know there's a ton of talent, but not someone you can necessarily build around at this point.
Okay, so we have one more just to touch on, and then we'll get into some of the free agent call-ups that we wrote about. The last one is Walker Buehler. I know that there are only realistically a handful of minor league pitchers that are interesting from a long-term standpoint, just based on how their high attrition rate. But Walker Buehler is definitely a guy that's gotten some buzz maybe toward the tail end of last year and this year after he came back from Tommy John surgery. And it looks like he's going to get the call to pitch primarily out of the bullpen for the Dodgers in September. Do you have any thoughts about Walker Buehler? He might not, as we've said for most of these guys, he might not be a guy that you can rely on for this season in redrafts outside of maybe a hand, like a hold or two, if you're into that sort of thing. But what are your thoughts about Buehler?
I think long-term, Buehler's fascinating because they fast-tracked him to get to the big leagues, to get to this point. He was succeeding as a starter. He made 11 starts in Double-A. And then when they promoted him to Triple-A, it was, all right, we have a chance to win a World Series. This guy could get outs in the big league right now. I mean, he legitimately throws 100 miles an hour. Like, we can use this guy. So he hasn't made a big league appearance yet, but struck out over 13 per 9 in Triple-A, over nearly 12 per 9 as a starter in Double-A. So
that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's what matters. And the question for me with Buehler, and this is one of those things you're not going to be able to tell until you see it, but how do big leaguers react to the spin? I mean, he's got a good breaking ball. It was way too overpowering for guys at the minor league level. In Double-A, these guys just could not handle it. So we saw this with Tyler Glass. I remember seeing this with Tyler Glass now, who we talked about earlier. You know, his curveball was so good, no one could hit him in the minor leagues. But when big league hitters, you know, they can see it and they just don't swing. They're not fooled by it as often. So how does Buehler adjust from that standpoint? You know, is he, are people just going to sit fastball? He might be good enough to blow it by everyone. I don't know the answer to that yet, but he's got a ton of talent. And I just wonder how much of the command of the arsenal he has. It's not necessarily control, because he's trying to spike the curveball when he throws it. So I just wonder how the command plays at the major league level. I want to see it. And if he's good, then you're talking about an elite starting pitching prospect that they're going to stretch back out going into next year. So a lot to like with Buehler.
Yeah, I think the Glasnow point is a really good one, where it wasn't necessarily that he had bad stuff. It was just that he couldn't find the plate. And so hitters would just sit on hit fastballs right down the middle and he would get rocked.
Right.
So yeah. It'll be interesting to see if maybe in bullpen stints, if he can kind of do the David Price model where he tries to find the strike zone a little bit more and gets his feet wet against major league hitters in September with the hopes of him turning back into an elite starting pitcher next season and beyond. I think he's one of the few guys that you could get excited about in dynasty leagues. Just I try to steer clear of starting pitchers, starting pitching prospects if possible. But Buehler's definitely one of those that I would make an exception for.
The weird thing about Buehler, too, is that they really need him right now. Because that bullpen is, I don't know if you noticed this, the Dodgers have lost like 30 games in a row here. And the bullpen really has sucked. I mean, Brandon Morrow's hurt. I don't think it's serious, but you have Pedro Baez, who's just imploding left and right. They've had some struggles with some key guys in that bullpen. They had another meltdown last night on Wednesday night, so they could really use a guy like Buehler. I don't know if he's able to come in high leverage spots and actually get the job done for him, but I think they're going to give him a shot. I don't see why not. He can crank it up.
Yeah, and like a couple of the other teams that we've talked about that have called up prospects, the Dodgers have all of the room to experiment right now. Like, they've been bad. The Diamondbacks have won 13 games in a row, and the Dodgers still are up 10.5 games in the division. Like, it's unbelievable, like, that cushion. So, I mean, why not?
Let's I think throw this them is good. There. I think this is good for baseball that the Dodgers are having this little dip here, because I think it makes the playoffs very interesting. If you get a Diamondbacks Dodgers series, I mean, you start to look at like the narratives there, and it's like, well, are the Diamondbacks in the Dodgers' heads? Like, can Los Angeles beat this team? And Robbie Ray against Clayton Kershaw, I mean, would a ball get out of the infield for innings? I don't know. That's a hell of a pitching match up there.
And then follow it up potentially with Yu Darvish and Zach Greinke. I'd sign up for that series.
Yeah, that'd be fantastic. I'm on board. Let's make this happen. Let's do our best.
All right, well, let's get into some of the free agents that we wrote up for the column this week. Let's start with some hitters. I think we mentioned this guy in 12-team mixed. We mentioned him previously, but he is still available for some unknown reason. Kevin Kiermaier, who has just been hitting since he got called up from the DL. What have you noticed about Kiermaier, and why is he still available in so many leagues?
Yeah, it's a mystery why he's still out there in about 50% of leagues across the board. I mean, he's over 50% in ESPN and Yahoo leagues, and I don't get it. I don't like repeating the same players over and over, because having done this column for nearly a year now, I've found it gets pretty boring to write about like James Paxton or Alex Wood every week, and you're like, please just pick him up. He's still out there, and no one wants to hear you do that. So I don't like mentioning the same player twice in such a short amount of time. I mean, we had him in this space 2 weeks ago, and I don't get it. Since coming off the DL, he's hitting .360 with a .395 on base, slugging .613, 9 multi-hit games, 4 home runs, 3 steals, and 81 plate appearances. So what do you want if you're in a mixed league? Billy Hamilton went down. There have been a couple other injuries. I Carlos Gonzalez was another name I considered, but he's been so bad that I don't think you can now trust him. Kiermaier's kind of been good all year. He's just been hurt. So he's healthy. If he gets hurt again, whatever. But right now, he's been fantastic at the plate. So I'm buying.
Yeah, I don't have much to add, especially when you hit that Billy Hamilton point. Kiermaier is going to give you more as far as a little bit of pop, but he obviously is not going to give you Billy Hamilton level of stolen bases, but he's going to give you some, and he's available, and I don't know why. So go out and pick him up if for no other reason, so George doesn't have to write and talk about him next week.
Please, I've been writing a lot, and I don't feel like writing about Kevin Kiermaier again.
So the next guy on the list, who I know that you love and you've loved for a long time,
really?
Is Nicholas Castellanos.
I don't think I do, but
I mentioned asked me about him 2 weeks ago as somebody to pick up, or I mentioned him, and you were like, "No, I don't want any part of him." Oh, and then, so to my surprise and delight, you're talking about him this week.
I don't like Nick Castellanos. The reason I'm mentioning him is because the Tigers are in full rebuild mode. Okay. And they've gotten rid of JD Martinez, Justin Upton. Unfortunately, Victor Martinez is out with a health related issue. Miguel Cabrera will be back, but he's suspended right now. Castellanos is batting like cleanup every day, and it's still a major league lineup. So he's hitting. He's probably playing for his job. He's DHing a little bit. He's moving around. They have Jaime Candelario, who's come over and is playing a little third. Castellanos, I found this. He hasn't walked in a month. So he's literally...
Wait,
he hasn't walked in over a month. His on-base percentage since August 9th is actually lower than his batting average. It's insane. But
not great.
No, but he is hitting .337 during that span. So... he's literally trying to hit his way into a job next year, I feel like, and he might just do it. This is the crazy part of the year when weird things happen. The pitching staff of the Tigers is atrocious. They get down big. He's facing maybe not major league quality arms pretty regularly with guys on base. Like, he's doing damage, and it's like Blake Bortles, okay? Like, I don't like him, but he's getting so many opportunities here that he's doing enough with it. You gotta at least throw a dart there, I think. That was a ringing endorsement, I know.
Yeah, well, hey, that's interesting, and it'll kind of get us into some pitchers, but we were talking about this a little bit beforehand. You mentioned about how the pitching staff is so bad, and we wanted to do something a little bit different on this episode of Flags Fly Forever.
Yes.
And play a little game of Tigers pitcher or J.K. Rowling character.
I love it already.
Yeah, so...
Let's do it. First one.
Yeah. The first one is Artie Lewicki.
Oh, my God. You know, I actually watched his start because I was like, I can't believe he's a real person. And he got absolutely lit up. I'm going to say Tigers pitcher.
That's correct. He is a Tigers pitcher. There's some talk of him getting bumped, but as of now, he is scheduled for two starts next week if you literally don't have anyone else on the waiver wire. How about Cadmus Peverell?
Cadmus. Oh, my God. I'm going to go with Hogwarts character because this can't be real. Please say it's not real.
It is. It's a J.K. Rowling character, actually.
Yes. Good.
Well, I think we have time for maybe two more. What about Warwick Sopold?
Warwick Sopold? Oh, God. Tigers pitcher.
He is a middle reliever for the Detroit Tigers.
Yes.
And then the last one before we move on, Miles J.
Wow. I don't know this one. I feel like this is a trick question because that sounds like a J.K. Rowling character. It's like just generic enough. You know, I'm going to say J.K. Rowling character. I think you're trying to get me to think it's a Tigers pitcher. And then it's not going to be. So I'm going to say it's not a Tigers pitcher.
Okay. Well, he's actually a long reliever for the Detroit Tigers.
What?
That might get Artie Lewicki's starts next week.
You got to be kidding me.
Oh, so the Tigers have some interesting names, if not interesting pitchers.
This team astounds me. I don't know where they find these people. But congratulations, Al Avila. I'm impressed.
It's been a long time coming, though, where the Tigers probably should have traded some pieces. And so I guess it's probably better for the long term of the organization that they did. It just might not be great for definitely the rest of this year and a lot of next year.
Yeah, I can name like the entire PCL lineups for teams, and I have no idea who Miles J is. I've never heard of him. So, congratulations.
Well, he might get two starts next week, so that'll be fun to watch.
Yeah, that actually ties in with one of my my guys I wrote about in the deeper leagues. But go ahead. What do we got on the pitching side? We got some cool names.
One of the a lot of young guys that are available in on the waiver wire. The first guy that I wrote about that I'm surprised was available in so many leagues just because of his name is Lucas Giolito, who just had his best start last time out against the Rays, which take it for what you will. The Rays tend to strike out a good amount, but he had a really good outing. He struck out 10, walked one, gave up one run in seven innings, which is a really positive step forward for Giolito, who has kind of seen some of his shine diminished in the last maybe calendar year or so. But he's still available in a lot of leagues, and he's got a lot of matchups against the Giants. He pitched against the Giants tonight, actually, Friday night when you hear this. And I think he'll have a couple matchups potentially against the Royals from here on out, which is not too terrible as well. And he's available in a lot of leagues. Do you have any thoughts on Lucas Giolito?
Yeah, I think he's looked really good. I wasn't expecting this version of Lucas Giolito, but this is the guy we thought we were going to get a few years ago, where the curveball is really a tough pitch, especially for right-handers. I saw a little bit of his start against Detroit. I think it was now two outings ago for him, I want to say. And he was getting a ton of swings and misses on that breaking ball. So I like what I've seen so far. If I'm in a redraft league, yeah, he's a guy I want. But it's frustrating because I thought Ronaldo Lopez was a better, more polished prospect at this point, and that hasn't been the case this year. So that's
it's almost like you're a broadcast professional, because Ronaldo Lopez is on the list. He's on the 15 team list. We might as well just talk about him now. Things are looking up on the south side of Chicago, because with Giolito, with Lopez, you got Kopech waiting in the wings, obviously Moncada, Eloy Jimenez, they've got some pieces to maybe be good faster than we all thought. But Ronaldo Lopez just pitched six innings against the Indians. He didn't strike many guys out, but he only gave up one run against a team that seemingly has been scoring seven runs every time out. And he's looked pretty good since coming back from the DL in his last two starts. I know that you mentioned that you thought he was the more polished prospect, but is he somebody that you would be interested in adding down the stretch?
Yeah, and I think in a deeper league, there's a good chance, because he was a pretty popular pickup when he first got called up. I know I wrote about him. A lot of people in the industry did, because he was about as good of a prospect as you were going to get. He was coming off a stretch. I think it was 11 or 12 starts in AAA where he was lights out, you know, over a strikeout per inning, ERA under 2. This was as good as you were going to get for a late season pitching call-up, and then he really just flopped. The command wasn't there, and then he got hurt. So I think, yeah, in a deeper league, you wrote about this a little bit, but his pitch mix, I mean, you mentioned the changeup. I think the changeup's really good. I just don't know if he can locate it. You know what I mean?
Right.
He hasn't done a great job of that, and that's why I know he stayed away from it. But he's got that big fastball. That's obviously going to be the key for him, but if he has any sort of command of his secondary stuff, I mean, that's what's going to make him a decent starting pitcher moving forward. So I don't know if you've seen anything on the pitch mix. I haven't looked it up, but
yeah, it looks like he's been throwing the changeup a little bit more in his last couple starts, and he's only made two starts since coming back from the DL. He's been throwing a little more, and he's getting a lot of whiffs on it, around 17%. Which is pretty good for a changeup, I think. But if he can figure out a good balance between those pitches, like the fastball runs up to 99, like that's not a problem. One of the reasons that I was interested in him is that if the schedule holds, and that's a huge if at this time of the year with everyone tinkering with six-man rotations or skipping starts or what have you, His remaining schedule is basically Royals, Tigers, Angels, some of those teams more than once, which the Angels are better, but they haven't been awesome for the whole year. And that's a pretty nice stretch for a pitcher as far as remaining starts go.
Yeah, I don't like that Angels matchup now that they've added to that lineup. But
well, they're considerably better.
The rest of that is pretty good. So, yeah, Lopez is interesting. He's going to be one of those guys I think that always frustrates me, because every time you think you figured him out, something goes awry with him. So I don't know. It's weird. I feel conflicted because it's weird. You mentioned like the Prometheus effect. It's weird that we're at the place where Giolito is now the better prospect. It's just weird to me.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. One of the things that I found with Giolito is that he was always great fastball, great curveball, but he threw a ton of changeups against the Rays, who have been traditionally like a pretty heavy left-handed hitting lineup, and it was a super effective pitch. And if he has a pitch to throw to lefties, I think that kind of changes everything with Giolito's ceiling.
Yep, I'm with you.
So real quick, I guess we can just hit on Denelson Lamet is another guy in 12-team leagues that I wrote about.
Yeah, he's really, really effing good. Why is he out there in this many leagues? Is it because of the innings cap maybe, if they shut him down? I can't figure it out.
I think it was mostly because he was just not very good in the first half and walked a bunch of guys, gave up a lot of home runs. But I watched his start last night, just because I wanted to see how he would pitch, because I knew I was writing about him and didn't want to look like an idiot.
Yeah.
And also want to see a little bit of Jack Flaherty. And he throws high 90s. He's got a handful of pitches, and he has been cutting down on the walks. Like, I don't really understand it. Like, he's really good and could be, like, probably not ace level, but he could be maybe a number two guy like in next year or 2 years after that.
Here's the piping hot take I've been sitting on here for a while. I think I'd rather have him than Luis Castillo next year, when you factor in what the ADP is going to be
option factor in cost. I could see that.
Yeah. Lamet, I mean, he went toe to toe with Clayton Kershaw last week. It was a classic pitcher's duel, and it was the A lineup for the Dodgers too. It wasn't a B game, you know, sort of lineup. And Lamet's got a really good slider. I mean, this is a legit, you know, swing and miss, wipeout slider. And I think you mentioned the strikeout rate for him. He's behind only guys like Scherzer, Rich Hill, and my dude Jimmy Nelson, who gets no respect.
Yep.
Remember when Jimmy Nelson was done? That was a good time.
Yeah. He had two not great starts, and he was droppable.
He was done. Done as a mixed league option. I like Denelson Lamet. I think he's going to be a nice target for next year too, because I think people are going to want the Castillo factor because of how he finished the season, and 100 with movement. It's like, okay, a lot of guys do that now. I'd rather have Denelson Lamet. I realize how hot takey it sounds, but I promise you, I mean it. I really do.
Well, definitely with the qualifier of considering how much it's going to cost. I don't necessarily think that's piping hot. It's a lukewarm take in my book.
It's strong for me. I try not to make these sweeping declarations, but I feel.
Yeah. Well, he's going to get potentially the Rockies and Diamondbacks still to come, and they'll be at Petco Park, and both of those lineups are shockingly some of the worst road lineups in baseball.
Especially the Rockies.
So, and then he might also get the Giants. So go out and get Denelson Lamet if he's still available, because he's going to have some tasty matchups.
Just Pablo Sandoval's like 38 at bats without a hit or something like that now, or something crazy. It's like a record.
That's not great.
Do you know the Red Sox signed him for a lot of money? Have you heard? Do you know that?
I did hear about that.
Yeah.
That's how's that working out? Is that something that they've been enjoying, you think?
I think it was the high point of the Sherrington era in Boston, personally. All right.
Well, let's get into some hitters. 15-team mixed leagues. I know that you wanted to talk about Matt Olson, who's kind of been doing things out west, which might be the most low-key doing things just based on playing in Oakland, because you have to be really good to get notoriety coming out of Oakland.
Yeah, Matt Olson is kind of a dude now, and I was not a fan of Matt Olson, the prospect. I did not like him at all when he first came up, and I thought there was a really good breakdown that I found on Twitter. I don't have it in front of me. I think it was NBC Sports out in Southern California. They had a good breakdown of some of the changes in his swing. He's a little looser now, and that's really enabled him. I think they were talking about it's enabled him to get to pitches on both sides of the plate, so it's a lot harder to tie him up. He's a left-handed batter. He's done a lot of the damage against righties. I think 13 of his 15 home runs are against right-handed pitching. But since being recalled on August 8th, I mean, he's hitting .298 with 11 homers. He's got, I think, 38 home runs combined between AAA and the major leagues this year. The power is not a fluke. When you look at his average exit velocity, it's 10th out of 470 major league batters with 40 batted balls, which is sort of the golden number you look for in terms of batted balls in play to figure out whether or not it's statistically significant. That's a Russell Carlton fact there. Shout outs to Russell. But I like Olson. I think everything he's doing is backed up here by the underlying sort of metrics. And in deeper formats, he's out there, like, I think it's close to 80% of leagues across the board. I know power is power. It's everyone's got it. But he's a dude. I kind of like Matt Olson a little bit.
Yeah, and even with his availability, even if he's a strong side platoon guy, he's going to get a lot of at-bats. And he's somebody that you can get at a pretty low cost that'll kind of buoy a lot of those power stats, especially.
Yeah, now that Yonder Alonso's gone, he's playing every day, and that matters.
Imagine saying that last year at this time.
I just got a text from one of my Patriot friends. Uh-huh. Brandon Cooks is like Randy Moss. He better not let us down tonight. Oh my God. What is happening?
At least the expectations are manageable.
Yeah, the life of a Patriots fan here. I know it's so tough, but let's
blow through a couple more of these. You wrote about Brandon Guyer.
Yeah.
Is there more to say about Brandon Guyer other than start him against every left-handed pitcher that you face?
He hasn't been like that great against lefties, but this is my point. If it were April, I wouldn't be talking about him. But you have only a few games left in the year. He's got Wade Miley on Friday night. I mean, good God. he's got another lefty tonight. I don't know how he's doing tonight. But and then he's got the Orioles rotation this weekend. They haven't even announced starters for Saturday and Sunday. It's not a great pitching staff overall.
It'll be fine. They'll figure it out.
Yeah, and then he gets the Detroit Tigers J.K. Rowling staff next week. So, yeah, that could be like Matt Boyd and some other just kind of lackluster lefties. And I think Guy would be kind of useful here if you can play the matchups in a league with daily lineup changes. He's got a few good ones coming up that I like. So if you're in a really deep format, like, do it.
I'd like to say that I know. From what side of the mound Artie Lewicki and Miles J throw from, but I would be lying, so we'll just move on.
Pretty sure Lewicki's a righty, but I have no idea about Jay, who I didn't think was a real person.
All right, so the last 15-team, we already talked about Ronaldo Lopez, the last 15-team pitcher that I wrote about was Robert Stevenson,
yeah,
who
not a fan.
Seems like he's been a like on the kind of dynasty prospect radar for like 7 to 9 years now, and is finally kind of getting his feet wet. He's been a lot better lately. He still walks a ton of guys, but hasn't given up more than 3 runs in a start since his first start of the season. So he's interesting, and he's available and I would go out and take a look to see if there are any good matchups for Stevenson. You, on the other hand, are not a fan.
No. He's got 10-5 rights, I think is the joke that we've used at BP before. He's got 10-5 rights on the prospect list. Look, I don't know what to say about Stevenson at this point. I'm just not a huge fan of a guy with like major control issues here.
Yeah,
that's the real bugaboo for me. Those don't just go away. You can gloss over them and hide them for a little while, but you mentioned the Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde thing. Like, I think that's who this guy's gonna be. So I'd be a little bit terrified of Stevenson. I shy away from. I like the high floor guys. That's who I'm going to talk about for my deep league special. I love those guys because I know like if the bottom drops out, I'm still going to have a guy I can use. But this is like the ceiling isn't that high and the floor is like down a mine shaft somewhere. he scares me, man. I wouldn't want to lose my league because I trusted Robert Stevenson and you know. September.
Yeah, so I guess Robert Stevenson's kind of a how frisky are you feeling play, and
I
mean, whether you're you know willing to gamble, whether you're willing to roll the dice and lord it over somebody that you beat them with Robert Stevenson.
I mean, I just recommended Brandon Effing Geyer, so take it for what you will, but like I don't want that guy. Just saying.
All right, so let's hit on a couple deep league specials before we wrap up. You wrote about a pitcher, actually. Yes. Dylan Peters. Tell me about him.
I love him. He's really good. This is I wrote about him for this column and then for the big September 1st staff piece, which goes up. And my line in that one was actually like, I think it's kind of funny, but most 25-year-olds in Florida spend their time at the beach or down at the local watering hole. Peters like isn't one of those guys. Clearly he was like too busy dominating the Southern League in Double A. He had a 1.97 ERA, 40 strikeouts.
Yeah, that's not bad.
Yeah, 40 strikeouts and 11 walks in 45 and two-thirds innings for the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. So he was very busy this summer, and he's looked good. He had a pair of quality starts against the Phillies and the Nationals. Stuff isn't overpowering. I think he's 91 to 92 on the fastball. It's a pretty good three pitch mix. Gets a lot of ground balls. The upside once again is not really there. He's not going to be anything special, but we know the floor is pretty high. The Marlins suck. They're looking for anything in that rotation long term. He gets the Phillies and Nick Pivetta on Tuesday night, I believe. So he ripped through that lineup the last time, and other than Reese Hoskins, there's nobody that really scares me for the Phillies right now, because Peters is a lefty, so he'll be able to avoid Nick Williams and some of those other dangerous hitters in that lineup. So I really like Dylan Peters. I'd put him in the 12-team mix section, but he's out there in like 90% of leagues, so get on it. I think he could be a little bit of a difference maker here down the stretch.
Yeah, I don't know if I wrote about him. Yeah, I guess I did a little bit for the starting pitcher planner. And after I read your little blurb about him in the big BP call up piece, I had to move him up to, I have him in the start category because he's penciled in currently for two starts, one against the Phillies and then one at home against the Brewers, who tend to strike out their fair share. So
yeah, like
yeah,
what's,
go ahead,
what's
go ahead
the
and
worst,
get Dylan Peters.
Like, what's the worst case scenario? I still think he turns in a quality start. I mean, he took the loss against the Nationals, but that's only because they got a really good start from Gio Gonzalez. Like, he's at a worst-case scenario, he's going to give you a quality start, I think, which matters at this point in the season. There's not a lot of guys you can say that about right now.
So to wrap up, I wrote about Brandon Woodruff as the deep league, as another deep league pitcher. He's getting two starts next week as well. He's pitching at home against Pittsburgh and might match up against one Dylan Peters at Miami. Woodruff strikes me so far, he's only made four starts, and he has a 1.52 ERA, which obviously is not something that he's going to be doing moving forward based on some of his peripherals. But even if he regresses a little bit, I noticed that he is just blistering the bottom of the zone with his off-speed pitches, changeup and slider, and he's getting so many ground balls in his last two starts, over 63%. So even if the regression comes, and it will because it comes for us all, he could still be like a mid-threes guy, which, like you said, he's a floor guy. Like, his floor is a little bit higher than maybe some of the other guys that we've mentioned so far, even though his ceiling might not be as high as these guys as well. Do you have any thoughts on Brandon Woodruff?
So you're saying he won't be able to keep up a 90% strand rate?
I would bet against it, but who knows? There are crazy records set every year.
You know who did keep up a 90% strand rate one year? You'll never know.
Wade Miley.
No, good guess. Zach Greinke in 2014 or 2015, the year he almost won the Cy Young.
The year he had like the 1.7 ERA.
Yeah. His strand rate was stupid. It was like the highest in 40 years. I told someone that, and they didn't want to believe it. I was like, no, it's real. It's like the highest strand rate ever.
If Woodruff can be as good as Zach Greinke, then maybe he'll keep the 90% strand rate. Otherwise, expect a little bit of regression, but I think he can still be good enough even coming back to earth a little bit.
To tie everything back in together, I think that could be the plot of a J.K. Rowling novel, is Brandon Woodruff finds like some buried Zach Greinke glove in the parking lot in Milwaukee, and he's like, oh man, I think I'm gonna try this, and then he just goes on to win a Cy Young. So yeah,
all right, well, don't say anything else. We're gonna write that fan fiction as soon as we log off, and maybe it'll be up available on BP like this winter during the doldrums,
like the choose your own adventure thing we did with the Padres. That was fun.
Yeah,
Daniel Bard and other guys. That was great. One of my favorites. Hey, so that's it. We're good, right? We touched on everything?
Yeah, we talked about everybody.
Yeah, awesome. Well, the Patriots game starts in exactly 8 minutes, so I'm going to go get on that. And for everybody listening, hey, thanks for checking us out. We really appreciate it. We hope you like the Friday Free Agent Watch podcast. This is something we're going to try and do not only the rest of this month, but moving into next year as well. We'll have Mark will be on regular throughout the offseason. We're definitely going to be going to every other week once the games stop here. We've kind of just done this every week pod as a way to fill some time here. But, hey, I'm having a lot of fun with it. Mark, are you having fun? This has been really good.
This is just the most fun I've ever had. I'm really enjoying it.
The sincerity in your voice is, it's really, it makes me feel good. All right. So, once again, a little bit of housekeeping to close out here. If you like the show, leave us a rating and a review on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. Subscribe to Baseball Prospectus with a premium membership. If you do the super premium membership, it's not only fun to say, but you get access to the Bat Signal, our exclusive fantasy answering service. We answer questions all the time. You get to bother Craig Goldstein, which I think is the highlight of all of our days. So bother Craig. Ask for Craig when you send in your questions. I think that's it. We have a lot of content, hashtag content, up at BP right now. Mark, you've written like 10 things. The starting pitching planner, which I can never say correctly. You have that, and what else you got going on, man?
I wrote the call up for Walker Buehler, and I wrote a couple things about guys that might not see any playing time that have just been called up this September.
I like Austin Hayes, though. Don't besmirch Austin Hayes.
I like Austin Hayes too. I just don't think he's going to play much this year.
Well, yeah, that's probably true. All right, so for Mark Barry, this is George Bessel saying, thanks for listening. Until our next show, remember, this is 8 minutes, now 6 minutes before the Patriots game starts. Rex Burkhead is going off tonight. I want this on record. If he has a bad game, I'll edit it out. But no, I'm kidding. He's going to play well tonight. So Rex Burkhead, I want this on the record. All right. So long, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.